Yeah, I went November 30th to December 15th. Election was on Sunday, December 6th. I went with a group, Task Force on the Americas from the California group. They have tours there about once or twice a year. The National Assembly comes in January 5th. But I kind of wrote out a talk like what I thought you would probably want to ask me and what I asked people down there when I was there. As you know, here, the corporate press has been constantly full of anti-Chavez, anti-Maduro, anti-Venezuela propaganda. And this is part as a way to drive a wedge or build a wall between the solidarity movement and the solidarity of the people in the U.S. with Venezuela to make people in this country disenchanted with what's happening in Venezuela. And I think in a large part this has succeeded, and a lot of the U.S. population is people who used to be in the movement and solidarity of Venezuela are less involved now than they were, say, 8 years ago. We have to realize that U.S. can never go invade a country and overthrow a government until it convinces the progressive social movements in the U.S. that there isn't really anything there to defend. So they just not get involved and not protest. And I think U.S., they've doing that pretty well with Venezuela. I remember, take one quote from the Washington Post before the election. This is just from straight from the Washington Post. It said, "The question is not whether the election will be free and fair. It's already been established that it won't be. What's unclear is whether Mr. Maduro will resort to outright fraud or violence to prevent an opposition victory." This is the news from the U.S., from a prestigious U.S. newspaper. If you saw, maybe you saw Hillary Clinton's speech the night of the election, which is pretty outrageous. She just completely backed the right-wing neoliberal opposition, who she cynically equated with the defenders of democracy and freedom and human rights and economic progress in Venezuela. There is no pretense on her part, being a presidential candidate, remember, of being neutral about what was happening in Venezuela. So basically, you know from the U.S. media, you know, if the Venezuelan people vote the way U.S. rulers want them to vote, then it's a democratic election. If they don't vote the way U.S. rulers want them to vote, then it's a dictatorship. But I have to say, as I said there, who won the election in Venezuela? I'd say that the rulers of the U.S. stole the election from the Venezuelan people. The victor of the Venezuelan election was the U.S. empire. It was their covert election campaign that won. And they succeeded in turning the people against the Maduro government, in part because the PSUV, the Socialist Party of Venezuela that Maduro heads, did not take effective steps in response to the U.S. economic and media war against their country. Now, their Maduro government and the Chavistas were the only force in Venezuela that promised to respect the electoral results, regardless of what the Washington Post was trying to say. The opposition the whole time refused to say that they were going to commit themselves to respecting the electoral result. So if it is the National Electoral Council, as you know, Jimmy Carter's center has said, has a model electoral system. He's gone down there and observed several elections and said that they have one of the best electoral systems in the world. But that doesn't mean to me that I think these elections were free and fair, because the owners of the U.S. manipulated the election through their economic and media war. And they had many ways just to manipulate election results. If we just look at Chicago, where we had the election with Rahm Emanuel, how that was manipulated, that most people don't even realize the extent it was manipulated. You might remember the city bond ratings got moved to junk status just shortly after the election. They were waiting till after the election, and then your bonds are junk. And the courts indicted that Barbara Bird Bennett for bribery and corruption, which they had known long before the election. She was the head of the Chicago Board of Ed. And the city also sat on releasing the video of Laquan McDonald till after the election. Now, if it had been somebody they didn't want in office, they would have released all those things before the election, and there's no way that the incumbent would have won the election. But if all this had come out before the election, Rahm Emanuel wouldn't have won the election. And that's just what they've done here. So in countries that are weaker in relation to the U.S., it's pretty easy to manipulate the election, not just through the U.S. declaring, like it did Obama, declaring Venezuela a threat to national security of the U.S., even though he later said, yes, it's true, it's not really a threat to national security, but he still keeps that emergency order in place. And I know that Ava Gollinger, who wrote the book Chavez Code about U.S. interference under the time of Chavez, she said that the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, the International Republican Institute, I think it's IRI, and the NDI, the National Democratic Institute, I think are their names, they've tripled their funding for the Venezuela opposition this year before the election. We also have a website here in the U.S. called Dollar Today, which manipulates the price of what the value of the Venezuelan Bolivar is openly. It's a website in this country. You could think what would happen if some other countries, I don't know, say China, set up a website to try to manipulate the value of the U.S. dollar on international markets, what the U.S. would do in response. But the U.S. hasn't done anything for that Dollar Today website. And the U.S. has also coordinated smuggling operations with its ally in Colombia that have also helped to manipulate the Venezuelan currency, causing, I think, that has the highest inflation in the world now. So through this economic war that the U.S. has instituted since the death of Chavez, and through the media war that both started about, they accelerated it after the death of Chavez, is made sure in this media war here that we read in this country is echoed in Venezuela. It's not just something here in this country. It's picked up and people read about it there too, and all over the world. That's the power of the U.S. media. Using this this economic war it's been waging in this medium war, it made sure that the elections in Venezuela were not free and fair. Now to talk a little about what's the problem with what happened in Venezuela is the economic crisis that it's in. Its economy, I think it's contracting about 5 to 10% a year, is that right? Now oil prices have gone down from $140 a barrel to about 37 right now. 29. And that's 95% of Venezuela's exports is oil. Venezuela also has a non-functional, there's price controls and non-functional exchange rate. That's been a problem. That's why when the vote happened, it was the opposition got 112 in the National Assembly and the Chavistas got 3 votes. There was so much discontent with the government's handling of the economic problem that even the 3 indigenous delegates to the National Assembly that were created under the Chavez government, they all sided with the opposition, the neoliberal opposition. And what does this opposition want to do? It wants to eliminate the labor law that they have, the housing missions, the other social missions, get rid of the cooperatives, to throw out Maduro, to close Telesur, to shut down the National Assembly TV station, to privatize and nationalize companies, privatize PDVSA, the oil company, to cut the pensions, to return land to the big landowners, and to purge the state institutions of Chavista members. But this is just what they want to do. We'll have to see what's going to happen. I think people voted. It's said that they voted to punish the PSUV for not responding effectively to the economic war which I could go into in a little. Most of my talk will be on that. But we should keep in mind that the opposition victory was based fundamentally on about 2 million Chavista voters not bothering to vote, that they didn't see any real reason to go vote for the PSUV this time. So they just stayed home. So it's not really that the opposition, the MUD, the MUD, their victory was based on winning over many Chavista voters. They won over a few, but not very many. What really happened is a lot of Chavista voters didn't vote. And the opposition won 2/3 of the seats in the National Assembly, which gives them a majority to basically do whatever they want, unless Maduro can somehow divide off a small group of the opposition. Because it's like 16 parties, and none of them are very, got much, even the one that got the most didn't get that large a percent of the large number of seats in the assembly. But the opposition won 56% of the vote compared to 41% for the Socialist Party. The vote was not a rejection of the Chavista program and what the Chavista, they have done over the last 17 years. It was just a rebuke to the present leadership of the PSUV, the Socialist Party of Venezuela, for not responding effectively enough to the economic war. So just to go over a little bit what they have done in 15 years. It says they, compared to what governments have done before them, they've spent 9 times as much in health care. They've spent 6 times as much on education, 10 times as much on science and technology, 6 times as much as on cultural programs, 6 times as much on housing programs. They raised the minimum wage 28 times. And they have done that with Social Security 21 times over the course of their 17 years in power. So there's many, many, many social programs that they have carried out. And they're still doing this right now. They built like 1 million homes this year, or the last couple of years. They just finished building the 1 million, which are basically almost free for people. Which might raise a question, well, if they're doing all this stuff, why did they lose the vote? But yes, that's what, I'll get there in a minute. So it was not any vote against free university of education, which they have there, or about the national programs to raise the educational level of the people, such as like GED programs, which they have all over, or programs for free health care, or the housing program, giving homes to people, or their very progressive labor law, which is much more progressive than most other countries in the world, or their model pension system and other programs and the pensions that give even housewives a pension. And it wasn't any vote against the organized community councils or the communes or the cooperatives or the land committees or the unions. It was really a vote about the high price and scarcity of the food and goods and for the long lines. That's what lay behind the defeat of the PSUV. The people were tired of the shortages, tired of standing in line. I met some who said they stand in line 15 hours a week for toilet paper, for flour, for sugar, for rice, for beans. And that just got, I guess it's like no matter what kind of good social programs there are, if you have to walk around all day with a stone in your foot and you can't get it out by yourself, you want someone to help you get it out, and you realize your friend's not going to help you, you're going to look for somebody else to get rid of this problem before you think about any other kind of issue. But even this year, with their economic crisis they were in, the government still finished building over 900,000 homes. Maybe it's 1 million now, I'm not sure. They've provided free computers and tablets and cell phones to students. They've given cars to taxi cooperatives for basically, I think, about $600 a car. But they didn't do what was really people wanted them to do, which was to counter the economic war by the oligarchies of the U.S. and then in Venezuela to end the food shortages. So why was the PSUV like that? I must admit, I talk to people who are in opposition, and I talk to PSUV supporters, and the ones who were supporting the PSUV gave me the best, most serious criticisms of what was wrong with the country now. So the main problem, of course, is the fall in the price of oil, and their prices have doubled. But Chavista has also said that many PSUV, that's the Socialist Party of Venezuela, National Assembly members and governors were corrupt. They said that the PSUV was a top-down party where the leadership often picks their candidates for electoral positions. They say that Maduro is not to blame, but this has been a problem since the origin of the party back, 2004? Five? A lot of people said that leadership now is basically simply deaf to the in its relation to the base. They were not listening to the anger and the frustration of the people they felt and what they felt about the shortages and the long lines. I know right before the election, our delegation was told by some representatives in the government that the PSUV would actually win more seats in the National Assembly than they had before. They expected to win 5 to 7 more seats, which shows you basically a disconnect between them and what's going on outside in the street. But I knew another one I talked to who predicted a PSUV defeat and said the PSUV leaders were incapable of hearing and seeing what was happening as being the combination of the economic war and their lack of decision to combat it. But it's not so much that the PSUV is corrupt, but that the state apparatus and the government bureaucracies are corrupt. Many employees in the governments are leftovers from the pre-Chavez era. Posts often went to non-Chavista people or to opposition people who joined the PSUV simply to get ahead for personal gain. And these people were heavily involved in obstructing carrying out programs and just using their positions to make profit. There is also widespread impunity for corruption, both in government and the opposition. That is, the government did not take sufficient measures against the opposition business sabotage or against its own people in the government. It is also said that the government bureaucracy was not combated by building on the popular power, the community councils and the communes. As I remember some years ago when the community councils and then later the communes were formed, it was to be an alternative people's form of government to the government bureaucracy that exists in place from before the revolution. But that really got completely sidetracked, or not completely, but mostly sidetracked. Now they're reviving it a little, I hope. They're really going to do it. But I should add that their meaning of what they call corruption is much broader than what we mean in this country. For example, the guy who went and bought that medicine company to sell AIDS stuff, some $7 ejected up to $500 or $600. I mean, according to them, maybe to us, that's corruption. But in this country, that's just the free market at work. That's legal, right? Well, as it is. And when banks back in 2008 sold mortgages to people they knew weren't going to be able to pay, and then they bet on the market against their own investments that they were going to go bankrupt, that's legal in this country. That would be, in most other places in the world, it's serious corruption. Just like buying politicians, that's legal in this country. In other places in the world, that's called corruption. So I have to say, when I talk about corruption in Venezuela, it's a much broader definition of corruption than is used here. There's another problem that there is corruption in the armed forces and the police, who are both involved in the hoarding and the reselling at high prices of imported basic necessities on the black market in Colombia. The armed forces, especially the National Guard, got started maybe 70 or 80 years ago, and I was told it was always corrupt, and it's since its birth. It's not something that just happened recently. They control the frontiers, so they control what goes in and out. And the police have always been pretty corrupt. And they're involved in when the government imports basic foods at very cheap prices, which then sell in the subsidized markets, they'll take a lot of this food and sell it in Colombia for much higher prices, or on private markets for much higher prices. And that's what's going on constantly. But this widespread corruption is widely known among the population. They could see it all the time. And I didn't find anybody who said that the PSUV was taking decisive action against it, or against the economic war. Or did they think, anybody who was voting for the PSUV, think that Maduro was going to take decisive action against this corruption and economic war after the election, even if he had won? Another problem with the party was that it did not educate and mobilize the people to combat the black market or the widespread hoarding and stealing and reselling of subsidized food. This is in part, again, because the government functionaries, along with the National Guard and the police, were often complicit in it. And the party did not devote enough energy to political, moral, and socialist education and values. We cannot really build a socialist society without advocating new moral values for the people, for the value of working for the collective, not for yourself, for personal gain. You have to have leaders who personify those kind of values, and they see, people can see that kind of sacrifice, and they follow they see that example, then they follow that, or they try to. But if they don't see that, then it's just kind of empty words. Now, with Chavez, they could see that, and he's very highly, almost revered, I suppose, in Venezuela. But we do have to, we can't just give computers and cars and homes and a lot of things to people without any kind of political education to more values about working for the community. That's, you can't build a socialist society without having a whole new value system being brought to people. So I was saying that the government did very little to resolve the problems of the shortages and high prices. It did very little to punish abuses in the black market, in hoarding and in buying and selling of subsidized food. It didn't even do simple things like printing higher denomination of bolivars, like the highest denomination of bolivar, which is their money, is 100. And 100 bolivars on the black market is 15 cents. That's the largest bill you can get. I don't know, they just make it so, they could have done some very simple things to make things easier, but they didn't do it. Another problem that people pointed out to me, that the top leaders were often rotated around in top posts so that new faces did not emerge, and that those that were in top positions were not there long enough to really carry out and make sure the policies were implemented. Another thing that people said was that about one-third of the subsidized goods, which is mostly food, end up in Colombia, being resold at much higher prices. Now, people were tired of waiting in line, and lines were basically limited to poor areas with very few lines in the middle class areas. This was part of a campaign to neutralize the pro-Chavista vote, because it's poor people that vote Chavista. There's also widespread waste that had gone on for many years that often the government started, I mean, this goes back to the time of Chavez, started many very good social programs but really didn't follow through on them. And they were often, became a waste of money. For example, there were 60,000 cooperatives that were formed under President Chavez, but there's only 1% of them are functional right now. The rest of them, they've been receiving money. Some of them were just formed to get money from the government and then they just spend it however they feel like it. Another problem that people said was that the PSUV was increasingly geared towards just winning elections, just becoming an electoral machine, so that any claim about creating an alternative state or a dual power through community councils and people's communes just became sidelined. There is also a problem that had gone on for many years, that there's little effort to generate national production and industrialization or agricultural self-sufficiency. Most of the food that they rely on to eat is imported. Another problem they had is that even though they have nationalized a number of companies, the nationalized ones were not very effective, not efficiently run. I think one person told me that company Polar, which controls a majority of distribution of goods in the country, it's a private company, they are really the only one that is actually produces flour, that the government set up companies, nationalized companies, to produce flour, which is a major shortage of flour in Venezuela. But their other nationalized companies are not very productive, and so they haven't really been any kind of alternative. So that's a problem. You can't really nationalize companies that are private companies that are sabotaging the economy, because when you replace them, nationalize them and replace them, and they're not productive either, it's not a solution. Another problem I could see is that a person could make more money standing in line to buy subsidized food and then reselling it later than he could with getting a regular job. But it's not to say all these problems, which, I mean, any country building a new society has innumerable problems they have to face. But this is not to say that the opposition has in a good position right now. Because the opposition, the MUD, I forget, what's the MUD stand for? The problem they face, they might have 2/3 of the vote in the National Assembly, but the Socialist Party remains the largest and the most organized and the most powerful party. And the opposition MUD is still quite divided, with people who are just in there to get spoils for themselves, get in positions for themselves where they can make money. So it's not a united opposition. Another problem with them is that the opposition is that it's not popular, and its program is not popular, which program is basically privatize everything and turn Venezuela into a neoliberal neo-colony. End all the subsidies and eliminate all the social missions. So those who voted for it are not going to, or did not vote, are not going to sit still while all these things are dismantled by the National Assembly. And the people have not been defeated in this vote. They are still there organized. I went to several meetings after the elections, and it's clear that the people are willing to fight now to defend their gains against the opposition trying to take them back. And the people are fairly well organized. They do have a lot of communes, and they do have a lot of community councils and a lot of other organizations set up over the last 15 years that gives them a way to organize and to fight back against what the opposition might be trying to do. And also, I think there's also the prestige of Hugo Chavez that I think a lot of Chavista people there are not going to let the opposition undo what Chavez did, all the programs he started. Just out of honor to Hugo Chavez, you don't just sit still while this is done to your national hero. And I think that is going to be... that's a major factor also. Like I heard some people talking, some of the opposition say they were going to take Hugo Chavez out of his special burial place and put him somewhere else. And people are saying, if they try to do that, I have to go drive into Caracas. I can't let them, can't sit still while they do something like that. So we'll have to see what happens in the future with this new National Assembly that comes in January 5th. About if what they try to do is going to be met with massive national protests or not. Now, the election, what really determined the election was the food program and the food problem. So I'll have to go into that a little more detail. So even though they have free health care and basically free housing, a lot of other social programs we don't have in this country yet, and we're not going to have for who knows when, it was the problem with the food that would determine the result of the election. So what you have now, I think after I went around to private supermarkets and see they were full of food, and if I change my money on the black market, this food is cheaper than it is here, the same food. I could sort of see that, well, this is kind of a neoliberal food program they have right now in Venezuela. You have access to money, things are cheap. You don't have, I mean, access to U.S. dollars, things are cheap. You don't have access to U.S. dollars, you can't buy any of that stuff. So I think the minimum wage right now, if you take it and change it on the black market, the minimum wage is about $13 or $14. So with that, you can't buy stuff in private markets. You have to wait in line in the subsidized markets to buy the food.
Sorry, $13 or $14 a what?
Month. So for the people there, I talked to some opposition people, and I voted opposition. And I said, well, for me, from the outside, the choice is between an anti-imperialist progressive government and a neo-colonial, neoliberal government. But it's for you, it's for, I'm sick of standing in line, and inflation is too high, and they're not doing anything about it, so I'll try somebody else. So to go into more about the prices, to import food, which basically all of it has to be imported, the basic food, the government will sell a private company for 6 bolivars, they get a dollar. But on the black market, 850 bolivars is a dollar. So they would pay 6, but on the black market is 850. And if I just want to exchange money in the bank, it's 200. So it'd be very easy for any kind of government official to make some contract with some private businessmen and import food from the U.S., say, I give you a contract for $100,000 to import something, and you give me $100, which I could exchange that in the black market. That's a fortune. And these companies often would go to the U.S., and they could make a contract, say, well, I'll say I'm going to import $100,000, sign a contract to import $100,000 worth of food, but I'm not really going to buy $20,000, and I'll give you $10,000, and I'll take the rest of the money back and change all this money on the black market. Which I think this kind of, people are saying this kind of thing goes on a lot. So also the problem became, if you can get 850 bolivars to a dollar on the black market, and you're somehow in charge of distributing bolivars because your position in the government, then you just take a little bit of that, you can live pretty well, and even though there's 200% inflation right now. Another problem is a lot of the people who are in the National Guard who control the borders also have positions in the government, which doesn't help this trying to resolve this kind of corruption situation. And I don't know about this, I was just told this, but I didn't verify it, about the problem with the money they have there that's kind of extreme. So on the border in Colombia, you get 4 Colombian pesos, you can get a dollar. You take that, so you buy a dollar, 4 Colombian pesos is 1 bolivar. So I pay 4 pesos and I buy a bolivar. But then I go to Bogota, and this 1 bolivar is 533 pesos in the bank. So I just made 529 pesos just right there. So if I buy 7 bolivar, if I'm in Colombia and I buy 7 bolivars at the border, I can take them to Bogota and exchange them for pesos and then buy a dollar with that. So for 7 bolivars, I can get a dollar exchanging on these black markets. Then I can go back to Caracas and take these 7 bolivars, and it's, which has become a dollar, and I can sell it in that black market for 850 bolivars. If you're following all this, it's like, no? Huh? It's just like basically you have, you can become a millionaire just taking some bolivars to the border and being involved in this system without, and there's no one there stopping it. So let me see. A guy told me that if you, a company that imports soap to Venezuela, They get about, say, 18 bolivars to import soap. And they're supposed to sell it at the official rate of about 304 bolivars in the subsidized markets, I guess. But you can sell it on the black market for 2,000 bolivars. And so what happens is, like, you know, you're supposed to take this soap to the subsidized market and sell it for 300 or 400, but you make some deals with people and you sell it in the private market or in the black market for 2,000 based on just 18 bolivars. So you make a fortune going to the black market. Now, I could also, to make it a little easier, I could tell you about this black market money and the manipulation that goes on with this website Dollar Today, that if you're really going to exchange a dollar, even though in the black market it's like 850 to a dollar, if you go to stores and you want to buy stuff and you say, well, the same price in the United States is this, and so it should be this in Venezuela, like Burger King, Subway, Carnation canned milk, some of those some things I looked at, McDonald's, it's about 200 to a dollar. So if I guess 850 to a dollar, a Whopper with cheese is $1.25. Or a box of Special K cereal is 35 cents. Or a can of evaporated Carnation milk is 50 cents. I mean, these prices are, they're obviously wrong. But this is, somehow people are following this black market money, this manipulation that goes on from the U.S. But if, in any case, if you had access to dollars in Venezuela, either having a foreign bank account or being in the government with access to dollars, then you'd see that your dollar there is buys much more than your dollar does here. So you're pretty well off right now. Under the system as it is, you're doing, it's pretty good system for the people with money. Yeah, with dollars. And the people who are working people, it's like, it's terrible. You can't get anything. You got to wait in line. And that's one reason, you know, everybody could see that there. That's why they were so angry. And then the vote came, they voted the way they did. Because they were fed up with this kind of system that's been going on for maybe a year and a half. And the government was not really doing anything to fix the problem. Which I can't say why they're not, but they weren't.
What was the reason that it started a year and a half ago? Was there a particular thing that happened?
I would say that it started a year and a half. Chavez died. It was a very close election. The U.S. thought, well, we almost got it. We almost got rid of him. Got to escalate this thing. The price of oil went way down, started going way down. And they started escalating, say, well, can't turn the Venezuelan people against Hugo Chavez, but maybe with Maduro, it's a lot easier. So they greatly escalated this economic war on Venezuela.
When oil was higher in price, wasn't the U.S. also manipulating commodities, creating shortages? The government of Venezuela have done anything differently?
But has been more dramatic for the last year or year and a half, is true. And 3 years ago, the oil prices were high. And what happened is that because we still had enough income of dollars, we import a lot. But big chunk of those imports end up in Colombia. So that's part of what Stan has been trying to explain.
Yeah, maybe. Well, if a barrel of oil is $140, then the corruption is not a big deal, and the smuggling is not such a big deal. But when your money starts to contract, then it becomes more painful, becomes a bigger issue. Someone told me there have been 4,000 people who have been jailed for smuggling and hoarding. But the problem is that it's like endemic. It's like, well, you can look at it. If I say, like, with 7 bolivars, you just change a dollar, or 1 bolivar, you could end up, I forget. But I mean, the profits are enormous. Just working on the black market. It's like, why get a job? You make a fortune on the black market.
So
If you get access to dollars to import food at like 6 bolivars to a dollar, and you go sell that, you paid 6 bolivars for it, and you go sell it in the black market for 850, well then why do any work? Why import anything? These some women I was talking to in a community council out in the country, I asked them, they were ones who are saying they wait 15 hours a week in line for food. And I asked them, what do they get on their Mercal, their subsidized food? They said, now they don't get too much anymore. They said, per month they get 1 chicken, 1 kilo of rice, 1 kilo of milk, 1 kilo of corn flour. They don't get any sugar or any coffee or any cooking oil. And all these people know that this stuff exists. It's there. You can buy it in private markets, and you can buy it on the black market if you have money. But if you don't have money, well, too bad. I ask people, why didn't the government get rid of, they have a, give companies a 6.5 bolivars to import food, and then they give them $12 to import some, 6.5 bolivars to import for a dollar to import food, and 12 bolivars to a dollar to import other goods. And a regular, in the bank, it's 200. And I said, well, I don't know. A bank rate of like 200 seems pretty accurate when I go look in the markets compared to U.S. prices. Why they don't get rid of these two other exchange rates and have 200 to the dollar, and then just get rid of all the subsidized markets. Because all the subsidized markets do is cause hoarding and smuggling and raising and speculating in back markets. So you get rid of all these subsidized markets and just give people like a debit card, the poorer people, with money on it every month to go buy food in the private markets. Then you'd get rid of the black market and the hoarding and the smuggling, because everything would be the same price. So there wouldn't be any, why would you smuggle? You can't take it to Colombia and sell it and make a fortune, because it's the same price, basically. And if it cost a lot of money, they didn't really need to build these 1 million homes, people said. You don't need to give away cars at new cars at $600 a new car. You could have spent the money solving the food problem. And if they did that, then it doesn't seem like it was that complicated. Why they didn't do it, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't. They were worried. They're saying, we're going to do stuff after the election, which makes you wonder, what's the point of having an election if you can't build some kind of move towards socialism, because you have to worry about elections, and elections are like this are not, whose interest do they serve? Another problem they have is like gasoline. I don't know why they don't fix this. 2.5 gallons of gasoline costs 1 bolivar. 1 bolivar is 850 bolivars is $1. So you pay like a penny to fill up your gas tank. So there's just like, well, we'll take all this gas to Colombia and sell it all for the regular market price. So I was thinking about, well, what's the problem with they have? It's like, I think as some people, you cannot just take the kind of state that they have, like we have here, and build a socialist society without dismantling this state and building a new kind of state. Now, Venezuela did admit with their constitution, cannot use the old constitution to build some kind of Bolivarian society. We need a new constitution, and that's what they did. You cannot, I mean, even if the United States, if we elected a socialist presidency, it would still be millions of obstacles they could put in the way to make sure that things did not go socialist. Now, I remember one diplomat told me, he was very proud of this. He said, we are changing things from within the system. We are not changing the system as if it were a socialist revolution like Cuba, which I think that is their problem, is it? They don't want to do that. And I think another, I have to say, you know, I don't know if you are up on people like Steve Elner or Michael Libowitz or Mark Henniker, if you've read any of their stuff about trying to counterpose 21st century socialism to, I don't know, 20th century socialism, but it's, a lot of it's still 21st century. They try to counterpose it. I don't think very well. But we have to admit, you know, Venezuela is still a capitalist country. Basically, the economy is in capitalist hands. It's not a socialist country. And the problem that the government has now that I hear people say is the same things that people said about the problem with the Soviet government, that you have a government and a party that's disconnected from the people, that are not listening, and you have a large and corrupt bureaucracy administering the state, and you have inattention to moral and political education, and they're providing few solutions to economic problems. And I also don't think that Venezuela is that much of a democracy. Sure, they have votes and so on, but when you're put in a situation where most of the people are voting for the neo-colonial, neoliberal opposition because they're being squeezed, that's not really any kind of democracy. You're being forced to vote this way because of this pressure you're under. It's not something that you want to do. It's not any free kind of vote. But at the end up, we still have to remember that the real struggle that's going to go on now is, you know, the Venezuelan people are still organized and they're very politically educated, and they're going to probably fight to defend their rights. If back in 2002 they were able to organize themselves and overthrow in a coup in 48 hours when they were not very well organized and they were not as politically educated as they are now, and they're in a much more advanced position now than they were in 2002. So the opposition still has a big problem trying to deal with the people there to overturn all the gains of 15 years. And we should also remember that, you know, it is a great default, I think, of the U.S. people that we are doing so little in this country to expose what the U.S. government is doing to Venezuela. That's the real problem for us, is that we are not educating and protesting enough about the U.S. economic and media war against Venezuela or any other kind of foreign government. And even if the government had a very good program and were solving their problems, we should be still educating and mobilizing and organizing the American people to stop this kind of U.S. interference in other countries, which is, there's absolutely no right that the U.S. has to be so involved in the situation in Venezuela. And it's kind of too bad that the solidarity movement with Venezuela now is so much weaker than it was, say, 10 years ago. And with that, I'll finish.